Good morning, Kholiso.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Good morning, honorable members.
Morning, morning, Chair.
Good morning, Jefferson. Morning, honorable members. Do you have enough members to start the meeting?
Wow. Hello, Chair. Wow.
Yes.
No, we have 5 members, Chairperson.
Short of
one.
Okay. Maybe let's wait for 2 minutes.
Recording in progress.
Hello, Chair. We can start now. Hello, Chair.
Yes.
We can start.
Thank you, Honor Kholiso. Good morning, honorable members. Can you flag the agenda on the screen, Kholiso? Let me take this opportunity to welcome honorable members in your meeting and the the invited guests. You are well welcome. I want to take this opportunity to ask us to observe a moment of silence for meditation and or prayer. Thank you very much. Can I then request that I get any movers for the adoption of the agenda? I think on number 6 it will be consideration and adoption of the second quarter report. Not Kholiso.
Hello, Chair.
Yes, it's the consideration and the adoption of the second quarter report.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So can I get the mover for the adoption of the agenda, honorable members?
I move the adoption of the gender, Chairperson. Thank you.
Move and second, Chairperson.
There are people who have raised their hands, but Honorable Sotwai moved and Honorable Zeki second. Thank you very much. I'll not waste much time on
Maria, I don't need WhatsApp audio.
I'll not waste time. Can we then request please not to note apologies?
Morning, Chairperson. I didn't receive any apology for this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me then. Can you introduce the subject matter on the agenda? But I don't see any of them. Is it DG? DG?
Yeah, DM is also here, Chair.
Oh, DM?
Deputy Minister.
DM Chwete.
Morning, Chair. Greetings to all members of Parliament, the DG Mbulelo Changana, the DGs present here, and all officials. Chair, I want to apologize that I'm struggling with the network, that you don't see my face today. You know me, and I'm in the rural area in KZN. Chairperson, thank you for inviting the department to update the committee on the establishment of Human Settlements Development Bank. The bank positioned as a financial institution catering to needs across the entire human settlement supply value chain. Once fully established, the Human Settlements Development Bank is intended to be central to all financing and market activities across the entire housing supply chain, value chain. The bank will shield the risk through funding of large-scale development projects, as well as facilitate and fund requirements of housing finance intermediate operating in the social and gap markets. We already support a number of specialized asset-based social housing finance entities. The ambition remains to have the Human Settlements Development Bank play an active role in revamping the business models for housing banks that will address these challenges. Chairperson, the project approach is twofold. The first step was consolidating operations of three entities, the Rural Housing Loan Fund and the National Urban Reconstruction and Housing Agency, with the National Housing Finance. A corporation, Finance Corporation, through the conclusion of donation agreement. The creation of Human Settlements Development Bank is a final step, Chair. Excessive research has gone into influencing direction of the project. We're hoping the bank would be up and running by now. If you still remember, Chair, last year you asked questions that do we have the money for this? And also at that time we're saying it was during former Minister Lindiwe Sisulu. The cabinet then, the memo then was ready to be taken to cabinet. But when Minister came, she was worried about money and operating without money. So she concentrated on making sure that we start checking whether there's gonna be money for this or not. The presentation will outline the project approach, project plan, and then speak to what still remains to be done. The draft Human Settlements Development Bank Bill and the draft business case for establishment of the Human Settlements Development Bank was presented to the public sector stakeholders and has subsequently been revised, as I said. It's revised a number of times for alignment purposes and incorporate inputs from stakeholders. That's what the minister is busy doing. To get more detailed reports of where we are, I think DG will assist me to maybe there are areas where I did not raise. I'm going to request the DG to assist me and his team. Thank you very much. It's short as it is, Chair. I think it will elaborate more when we do the presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
DG?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The DM has given me a very good executive summary of the bank, where we are with the process, and the DM is correct. We started this process as early as 2014. The intention was to get everything done the latest by 2020. Chairperson, without wasting much of your time, I'm going to ask Jan Maritz to take us through the presentation. But I want to stress the point up front, first before Jan comes and make the presentation, that we get asked this question all the time, whether this is going to be a deposit-taking bank. And I think it's important to stress up front that this is not going to be a deposit-taking bank like other commercial banks. Because if it's going to be a deposit-taking bank, we would be required to comply with all the other rules around capital adequacy or Basel IV, which regulates the functioning of banks. And that point is very important, Chair, because if we were to convert this bank to be a deposit-taking bank, it will take us another 5 years. To conclude the process. It's one of the reasons why we've delayed the process, because amongst us colleagues, there are those who wanted this to be a retail bank and a deposit-taking bank, and there are those who said, no, let it be a DFI, like any other DFI, a Human Settlements Development Finance Institution. And I think we've settled with making sure that this is a DFI and not a deposit-taking bank. I think that point is very important, especially in the market, because I'm sure the market would want clarity around this particular issue. Person, without wasting much of your time, I'm going to ask Jan Maritz to take us through the presentation. Jan?
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, members of Portfolio Committee and colleagues. I'm not sure where the presentation is. Let me see if I can load the presentation from my side, if it's allowed.
You can load it from your side.
All right, can you see the presentation?
Not yet, Marie.
Yes, we can see it now.
Thank you, Chairperson. As indicated, the purpose of the presentation is to update the Portfolio Committee on the establishment of the Human Settlements Development Bank. In terms of the table of contents, I'm just quickly going to run you through the background, going to touch on the project approach, and then also spend time on the project plan for the remaining action steps that we must deal with, and conclude with recommendations. Now, in terms of the background, I think it's important to highlight the events that led to the review process. Firstly, there was the rationalization, there was the National Treasury review process that took place in 2008. There was a request for National Treasury to look at all the national DFIs that have been established to investigate whether they're still relevant, whether they're cost effective, and whether they still create impact in the areas of need for which they've been established in an ever-changing environment. Now, specifically in terms of the housing sector, the National Treasury found that there is a need for the three development finance institutions that we have to be consolidated. Those three development finance institutions are the Rural Housing Loan Fund, National Urban Reconstruction Housing Agency, as well as the National Housing Finance Corporation. Subsequently, the department commenced with its own review of these institutions. That was an intense review of each individual entity, where we looked at the mandate, the operations, functions, and the development impact that they've been able to create. Part of this review process was also triggered by the fact that the department's mandate was expanded from housing to human settlements. So in 2014, after a series of operational research reports, we were able to confirm the National Treasury findings, and we started the actual rationalization process. The strategic intent was aimed at heightening the development impact and refining the efficiencies towards delivering sustainable and affordable human settlements. We have to be sure that we have an optimal institutional arrangement in place that is able to then address the needs across the spectrum of the value chain in our human settlement sector that we're responsible for. In 2014, in October, the Minister of Human Settlements made a pronouncement to indicate that the business model for the consolidation of the DFIs has been reviewed and that the first phase of the consolidation has begun. Subsequently, the department established a project steering committee who would then oversee the processes and procedures of the setting up of the new entity and advise Minister accordingly on the progress. Because there are different elements to this program that must be addressed. You've got your legislative component, policy component, and of course the institutional personalization component that involves the business case that we then have to motivate the why and how exactly, the project plan of how you're going to establish this entity. The project's being approached in two steps. The first step is the consolidation of Nurture and Role with the NHFC through conclusion of donation agreements, as Deputy Minister also indicated. And then secondly, the idea is then to transform this consolidated entity into the Human Settlements Development Bank as the second and final step. The next slide basically provides a summary of the various milestones that we had to follow in terms of the first step to be able to achieve the consolidation of the three entities. And basically, we are dealing here with the instruments that we require to achieve this consolidation and also the two compliance requirements that have to be met. The first compliance requirement in terms of the Companies Act, the second compliance requirement in terms of the Public Finance Management Act before the final conclusion and implementation of the consolidation could be finalized. I think what's important to indicate in terms of the business case is that the business case must provide for us the rationale for the consolidation. And in terms of the business case that was done, the rationale is basically fourfold. Firstly, it's to ensure that existing capacity is retained. It was found that the capacity that was there in terms of each of the individual DFIs, it's able to create impact, and therefore we should retain it. And what we should be doing is just to expand on that available capacity rather than to eliminate any of that capacity. Secondly, the idea is to realize synergies and effect cost savings. When you merge your systems and processes, you are able to then operate more effectively. And also, if you think about the rationalization of your governance structures from three entities to one entity, there will be obvious cost savings that you'll be able to achieve. Thirdly, it's about the maximization of your balance sheet capabilities. When you consolidate the capital of the three entities, you are able to redirect capital to areas where you have significant need and where you can create significant impact and therefore eliminate any unproductive capital allocations. And on top of that, you would be able to then also leverage that capacity with private sector funding. And finally, you would be able to regularize and strengthen the mandate and authority of the Human Settlements Development Bank through the creation of enabling legislation, because enabling legislation will bring about a fixed mandate in which the entity must operate. Last, I think, important terms of the draft business case is to highlight that two possible routes were outlined to achieve the consolidated entity. The first route was to consolidate the three entities first and then to be followed by enabling legislation that would then transform the consolidated entity into the Human Settlements Development Bank. The other option that was put on the table is to create a legislation and through provisions in the legislation achieve the consolidated entity. The first option was pursued and that was done to be able to access low-hanging fruits such as to achieve cost efficiencies and to optimize your capital allocation whilst the legislation then unfolds. Secondly, in terms of the preparation of donation agreements, since these three entities were established in terms of the Companies Act, the instrument that was identified to achieve this consolidation was donation agreements that could be used, and those donation agreements would then provide for the transfer of the assets, liabilities and the staff of Nurture & Rolf to the NHFC. The boards developed these donation agreements. So the boards of Nurture & Rolf finalized these agreements by 2016, but it could not be implemented at this point in time because we still had to look at the regulatory compliance aspects that had to be met. This brings me to the need for approval by the company tribunal for the transaction. The Rural Housing Loan Fund and National Urban Reconstruction and Housing Agency were established as non-for-profit companies. And in terms of the Companies Act, when you wind down such a company, then the assets must be redirected to another entity with a similar mandate. Now, the NHFC has been established in terms of the Companies Act as a company with share capital. So it is assumed that it is a for-profit company. Government owned all the shares of NHFC, so really its activities and effort was directed to uplift society in terms of housing. But in terms of the Companies Act, we couldn't then merge the companies, and what was required is that we had to go to the company tribunal for a special approval to be able to conclude the transaction. That application was made and the approval was issued on the 28th of April 2017. The second regulatory hurdle that we had to overcome is to obtain approval in terms of the Public Finance Management Act for this transaction. Particularly, we're looking at Section 66(3) of the Public Finance Management Act that deals with the borrowing powers of a public entity. Now, the Rural Housing Loan Fund had a loan facility with a German development bank called KfW through the Development Bank of Southern Africa. It is a back-to-back loan agreement that was concluded. So now in terms of consolidation, the obligation would then be moved from the Rural Housing Loan Fund to the NHFC, and that is why approval was required. And the approval was obtained from the Minister of Finance, the concurrent approval in September 2018. After the compliance requirements were met, both in terms of the Companies Act, in terms of the PFMA, the donation agreements could be implemented. And all the assets, liabilities, and staff of Nurture & Rolf, it was therefore transferred to the NHFC. The effective date of consolidation was 1 October 2018, and the NHFC is facilitating the deregistration of Nurture & Rolf with the Company's Intellectual Property Commission, where after the entities will then be delisted in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. So this brings us to the second step, which is then to transform the consolidated human settlements entities into the Human Settlements Development Bank. And in this slide, I'm just basically outlining the various milestones in this process. Currently, we are at the stage where we have to determine the capitalization options. This will be then followed by the cabinet approval process, the National Assembly process, the promulgation of the bill, and finally, the operationalization of the Human Settlements Development Bank. I'm going to take you through each of these milestones next. Firstly, what we needed is a Human Settlements Development Bank policy framework, because the policy framework underpins your enabling legislation. The Human Settlements Development Bank policy framework was developed in consultation with a wide range of stakeholders, including National Treasury, the Development Bank of Southern Africa, importantly, the Banking Association of South Africa, provincial departments, our sister human settlements entities, insurance companies, developers, financiers, etc. I think important to highlight is that from consultations that was held with the South African Reserve Bank officials, it was confirmed that in terms of the operating model that we're presenting, the bank does not need the license to trade as a bank, as it's not presented as a deposit-taking institution. The socioeconomic impact assessment was certified by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation on 26 June 2017, and subsequently the Human Settlements Development Bank Policy Framework was approved by MNMEC on the 16th of November 2017. The second aspect relates to the refinement of the business case. Since 2014, the business case had to be revised from time to time, and this is also to ensure alignment and to make sure that it is robust and able to provide for the development finance requirements across the whole human settlements value chain and be able to demonstrate long-term sustainability. A concept document was then developed on the Human Settlements Development Bank, and this was presented to our public sector stakeholders in 2017, where they had to comment on it so that we could then make sure that whatever we're presenting is a consulted product. Subsequently, the revision of the business case was finalized on the 13th of February 2018, and it was presented to our public sector stakeholders again, together with the draft Human Settlements Development Bank on the 28th of February 2018. These stakeholders included National Treasury, provincial departments, our metropolitan municipalities, and Development Bank of Southern Africa. And furthermore, the business case was also then presented at the Human Settlements Portfolio Committee workshop that was held later in the year on the 28th of March 2018. And subsequently, the business case was revised again to then incorporate the inputs that were made from both these consultative sessions. And the latest the business case is dated December 2019. I think also importantly is just to touch on the strategic objectives that's been put forward in the business case on the objectives of the Human Settlements Development Bank. And these strategic objectives are fivefold. Firstly, as indicated before, it's to increase the provision of finance across the human settlements development value chain. Secondly, whilst we do that, we shouldn't lose sight of the need that in this process, we should create transformation of the sector. Thirdly, we need to enhance integration and coherence of our human settlement development grants with other sources of funding to create scale. In this context, we're also thinking along the lines of what we're doing with the Help and Buy a House subsidy program. We have a combination of the subsidy together with private sector funding, and therefore you are maximizing impact. Fourthly, it's to increase the private sector leveraging capacity. And finally, whilst we do all of this, it's very important that the entity should remain sustainable while pursuing development objectives. And therefore, the entity must find a balance between creating development impact, but also on the other hand, remain sustainable. In terms of the preparation of the enabling legislation, I can say that the first draft Human Settlements Development Bank Bill was prepared in 2016. And it was devised thereafter to incorporate comments from internal stakeholders. And again, it was presented to our public sector stakeholders on the 28th of February 2018, as indicated, together with the business case. And it was also presented at the Human Settlements Portfolio Committee workshop that was held later in that year. And similarly to the business case had to be updated to incorporate the inputs that were made by stakeholders. Subsequently, the draft bill was certified by the State Law Advisors in 2020. It was tabled at Foresight on the 23rd of February 2021 and at the Cabinet Cluster Committee on the 12th of March 2021. At this point, we just need to highlight that in terms of the Banks Act, there is a requirement that when you have the name bank in the name of your entity or your institution, it requires you to then be regulated by the Banks Act. So what is required from us is to request for an exemption in this regard. There are other development finance institutions that carry the word bank in the name, such as the Land Bank, Development Bank of Southern Africa, and those development finance institutions are not regulated by the Reserve Bank. So similarly, we need to get exemption to be able to continue with this process for establishment of the DFI and for it not to be regulated in terms of the Banks Act. We've already submitted an application consideration and we have options. This is very important because the business case will present targets, consolidated entity. The business case stands at the moment. It's providing for 10 billion rand capitalization over a period of 5 years. So what is really needed here is that we need to identify and evaluate possible capitalization options in a financially constrained fiscal environment to be able to make it possible. So that's where we are at the moment, and we intend to have discussions with National Treasury to be able to discuss possible options that may lead us to a revision of the business case. So now I come to the remaining activities that we need to tend to in terms of establishment of the bank. And as I've indicated, we're now at the National Treasury process. The MTEP process has started. We've already received the guidelines from National Treasury. And that is why it's very important for us to make sure we have this meeting with Treasury. Our time frame that we specified for the first activity is therefore the 30th of June. And following this meeting, it would help us then to finalize our submission in terms of the budget vote. That submission is required by the 8th of July, because that's the closing date in terms of the guidelines. And usually National Treasury would provide us with an outcome of this process by December of the same year. So December 2022, we then expect to have an outcome on this process. I'm now going to hand over to my colleague, Mr. Ngwenya, who will take us through the remaining activities on cabinet approval and also the National Assembly process. Thanks, Mr. Ngwenya.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. DM and DG and colleagues. Chair, I'll take you through the process that we intend to undertake as soon as the revision of the business case has been finalized and the consultation, as indicated earlier by my colleague, has been concluded in order, let me say, not to revise the business case to give effect to the issue that's relating here to the capitalization of the bank. What will happen, pursuant to that, Chair and Honourable Members, it will be that we intend actually not to present and proceed, you know, with the presentation of the bill before the Cabinet Committee, basically to seek an approval, you know, of the committee and Cabinet in the main, you know, to in order to commence with the public comment process. The public comment process is in the main to solicit them, you know, comments as far as the, you know, the intention of the bill is concerned. The other issue that we wanted to do as well is the issue of once we have concluded this particular process of the public comment process, we will of course review what we have received and incorporate into the bill, and subsequently, Chair, proceed, you know, with the resubmission of the bill before Cabinet for introduction this time, you know, into Parliament, wherein, you know, Parliament will of course engage in its own process in terms of the joint rules and the rules of Parliament in terms of processing the bill. So, Chair, in the main, that is exactly what we wanted to do. Next slide. But when processing the bill, we'll of course do that, of course, in consultation with the Chief State Advisors, you know, to deal with the issue of the constitutionality of the bill. And the same, of course, will be presented before yourselves. And the National Assembly, of course, will be guided by its own processes. Chair, we are doing this and giving this particular process because it's important that this process be outlined, that once, so that we have a specific time frames upon which what we intend actually not to conclude, you know, on the drafting of the bill. But I want to show the committee, you know, the committee members that, you know, the process of consultation with National Treasury on capitalization of the bank or the revision of the business case will of course happen simultaneously with the drafting, you know, of certain provisions of the current draft bill. And the current draft bill amendment thereof either will happen in a form of a new insertions or substitutions or omissions of certain provisions, as will be guided for in terms of the amendment of the policy foundation, including in the main, actually, the business case. So we wanted to do that in the main chair in terms of making sure that we don't delay the process of tabling the bill before cabinet for public comment and subsequently, ultimately, to parliament for processing. So that is the process that we want to follow, Chair, to make sure that we are on time and then we respond, quite frankly, to the affirmative, to the issues that have been raised either by the public or any other form of consultation that we intend to undertake. But we are confident that we'll do that, Chair, within that particular prescribed period that we have set out here in this presentation. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Ngwenya. I think, Jefferson, let me just deal with the remaining items on the project plan. So following the National Assembly process, of course, the bill will be submitted to the President for signing into law. And following that, we'll then commence with the activities that's needed to operationalize the bank. And that would mean we have to then prepare the corporate plans. The corporate plans would then have to be aligned to the content of what the legislation says. Then after the legislation is operationalized, we can then start to make sure that we implement these plans. They can then be submitted for approval, and we can then finally deal with the final capitalization of the bank based on allocations and further discussions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Johan. DG, you want to close the presentation?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think it's important to state upfront that National Treasury gave us two options, that if we want to capitalize the MDP, now we will have to capitalize it using the existing budget. There will be no additional money. They also made it very clear to us that they will not assist us to capitalize this MDP until it is established. So in Treasury's view, the establishment of the MDP is a leading activity, and the capitalization of the MDP is a lagging activity. And that is why we would want to move with speed, get the act promulgated so that we can start talking to National Treasury about how to get the NDP capitalized. We've done some work in terms of the numbers, and we were of the view that we need about 10 billion rand over 5 years to get the NDP capitalized, which translates into 2 billion rand per annum. This will assist us to leverage more funding from the private sector. Chairperson, I will leave it there and maybe hand over back to the Deputy Minister. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. DM, anything?
DG, I'm struggling with the network. I'm sorry. I think they've covered everything, Chairperson. We will just respond to questions or clarifications or comments that they have. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, TM, and your team. Let me invite honorable members to interact with the presentation. We have honorable Mokgotho, honorable Tafeni, honorable Heron. Those are the hands that I see now. Can we then proceed, honorable Mokgotho?
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question that I would like to ask is, when is the Human Settlement Development Bank bill expected to be introduced in Parliament? And then the second one, the Auditor General made a number of findings during its audit of the NHFC in 2020-21 financial year, including matters related to procurement and contract management, and internal control deficiencies, repeat findings in financial statements, and continued material non-compliance with applicable laws, among other matters. How is the NHFC addressing these shortcomings prior to the full operationalization of the Human Settlement Development Bank? And then the third one, could the department or the NHFC provide more details on the service level agreements in place with other banking institutions? The last one is, what are the reasons for the application for exemption from Banks Act number 94 of 1990? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mokgotu, Honorable Tafeni. Honorable Tafeni. Honorable Tafeni. In the meantime, therefore, let's pass and go to an Honorable Heron.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, thank you for the presentation. I think let me start with the objectives of the bank, which I think are objectives that many of us can support. Increasing scale, in particular, the objective of improving the private sector involvement in the housing sector through the subsidy and private funding, which seems to be the FLISP or the build or buy your own home program. I think those projects are admirable, but they're in the current framework of the housing program. I think that there are structural issues that no bank will be able to overcome. So I think we can't, I support the objectives of the bank. I have questions about how it's going to capitalize and how it's going to increase scale improve access to housing for those who don't qualify for BNG. But I think that it's going to struggle with achieving those objectives unless we also address the current housing program. So I have a number of questions as well. I mean, the difference between establishing this bank in order to finance housing delivery in whatever form it takes, and the current model where there is direct funding from the housing department's budget. What is the difference between establishing the bank, capitalizing it with to the amount of 10 billion rand, and the current model, which is the Department of Human Settlements actually providing the funding for the housing? I think most importantly is, how is this bank going to improve access to finance for those who don't qualify for BNG housing? Because I think the FLISP project, the FLISP program has not been successful. The scale of the FLISP, the number of families that access FLISP and are then able to find a product that they can afford in the market where they live is a huge problem. Just this weekend, I met with a family who qualify for 80,000 rand subsidy on FLISP, but based on their household income, they can qualify for a mortgage bond, assuming that they have a clear credit history of 200,000 rand. So in Cape Town, where are they going to find a house that they can buy for 280,000 rand? It's a product that just simply doesn't work unless we have a new banking model that allows perhaps for a longer repayment term on the mortgage so that people can qualify for more mortgage. I have a question around the maximizing the balance sheet of the bank. That would assume, I assume that means that the bank is going to retain assets and the balance sheet is not just going to be cash. So does that mean that we are going to be focusing on a different kind of housing model where the bank or the state retains some ownership in the housing products that we deliver in order to build up an asset or a balance sheet? Because currently the housing products are transferred to the beneficiaries and the community rental units are owned mostly by municipalities or provincial governments. So what assets does the Human Settlements Department, the National Human Settlements Department, have that can create a balance sheet that that is healthy to enable investment from outside of the public sector? I think I'll leave it there for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Heron. I'm told Honorable Stry is struggling to raise their hands, and we've lost Honorable Tafeni. Honorable Stry.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know what happened to my icon. Thank you for the presentation, Chairperson, which is someone very clear in assisting us for the rationale for this development bank, the Housing Development Bank. But also apologize to the department that we last heard about this maybe 2020, and we didn't know where is it now. We may ask questions that we've asked before. Please pardon us, DM. Okay, I just want to check in there's a presentation on the compliance areas that the development bank would need to comply on this and that and that. How I wish that also sustainability could also be included. I raise this because of the assessment that the department have made on the DFIs in terms of their performance, and then the results, therefore, to establish the development bank. That perhaps that should be included towards a stability, building the stability, future stability on the development bank for sustainability. It's a proposal, Chair. On the issue of the capitalization, I think the process plan that is presented is helping us in terms of the timing. When do you do the capitalization, which we have got discussions with the National Treasury, so that the capitalization is done when there's an act of Parliament, and also many issues have been addressed as concerns of the National Treasury. I have a question, Chair. The presenter talks about the exemption that the department would need to get from the Banks Act. I just want to check, because some other things come back to yourselves when you have resolved on issues of sidelining some legislative and regulatory issues, and you find that you've gone wrong in such. What necessitates this request of exemption? What are the difficulties of
having complying to this act, this bank act. I think, Chair, those are the few issues that I wanted to get. Also, please, can we have a be presented with the business case, which mandates the department and all of us to have this a development bank. It's important that we get to know those issues. You see, issues of this nature, that will take some time and will not be here in the coming 10 years. At least we should establish something that's going to be owned by many people with a clear rationale and a clear analysis of what does this mean. Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sky. Honorable Koniso Posengwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks for allowing me in. Mine is just one or two points I wanted to raise. Firstly, I would like to appreciate the presentation, and especially when we are still continuing with the immense settlement bank, because I think it will encourage our people also to get involved in the mainstream of the economy. Because when we speak bank, you know, a bank, banks in our country, it's really not friendly to certain sections of the communities. So I think that would give hope. But what is also important is that I know, or I can imagine, that the department, when they investigated the establishment of the bank, like Honorable Sesuai indicated, the sustainability, and they took on the experiences which we had in our country, especially in our government, the land bank, and other banks which were initiative of government, all the gaps and all the challenges which went with, they would be able to have this bank to be a bank which would be a people's bank, which would be friendlier, which would be able to develop our country as well. Because when you look at other countries outside South Africa, within Africa, there are banks which are sustainable, which are really working, and which are owned by communities as well. So I would really appreciate, and we hope that we'll have more experience, expertise, people who will be able to make sure that the bank is properly managed, and our people also know their responsibility, or those who will be accessing the resources or will be accessing funding from the bank to be able to know what their responsibilities are to make sure that this bank would be there for generations to come. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sopasimo. We've not received the Honorable Tafeni is not yet back on the system. We'll allow the department to respond when he comes. If he manages to come, we'll give her an opportunity. Just to add on the question, Mr. Ngwenya's presentation had talks about time frame, and the presentation itself doesn't have a time frame. It will be very helpful to have time frame and looking at who are in the mid-term. Therefore, any introduction of legislation towards the end of
of the term would not actually be very helpful, and just want to check if can we get the time frame so that as a committee we can then be able to ready ourselves. But the other thing is that just to align myself with the more detailed briefing on the business case itself and some of the questions that Honorable Heron have raised are very important and critical. Maybe just to check whether we can we then have the department after consultation with Treasury towards introduction of the bill, we can then have a workshop with those business cases and to take members along so that when the bill arrives in Parliament, we are able to ourselves have the common understanding and would be cleared with a lot of questions that would have as a committee. Let me hand it over to department to respond. I'm not sure who's starting DM.
Chair, the presentation has been clear. Slide number, I wanted to go back to slide number 26, if you could do that for me. Because my understanding, Chair, they are talking of project plan for remaining action steps. And then they say the president signs the bill into law. The Human Settlement Development Bank Act will then be promulgated through publication in the Government Gazette. And then they say time frame determined by the president. So it will mean if it's determined by the president, it's something that we as portfolio committee cannot, you know, be proactive and say it will be ready at such a date. But my understanding, ours is to push the office of the president to give us dates and then come back to you. And I'll be corrected by presenters because it's quite difficult when it's in the hands of the president. And he must be the one telling us when to do the signing and everything. And then UDG come in with other, then I'll come at the end because there are those that are quite clear for like my the age findings on NHFC regarding procurement. They were addressed to my understanding. I have IT systems that will address all the findings. For example, payment is faster. So I will then, without wasting time, DG, but I wanted just to highlight those because in my understanding, when they were presenting, we were talking about the time frames, the questions around the time frames and procurement, and I'll hand over to DG then and also the presenters and then come back at the end. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. The first four questions were asked by Honorable Mokutu. The first question was about
DG, Chair. I couldn't hear DG even at the beginning. Even now, I don't hear DG. The voice is too soft.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. It's better now.
Can you hear me now? Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah. There was the first four questions were asked by Honorable Mokutu. And I'm going to ask Bruce, the acting CEO of NHFC to answer the two questions. One about the audit findings, the AG findings, and then the second one about the service level agreement with other banks. Bruce, can we start with you?
Yeah, I think in terms of the AG findings, I think we did present to Parliament earlier this year on what we're doing there. On the procurement, I mentioned that we dismissed the supply chain manager and we've recruited a new one. So that's all happening. The other issues, payments are, new systems are in place to ensure payments are happening on time. As I mentioned then, we've also got these small contract SME contractors that we are paying. We have the contract says we'll pay them within 15 days. We're currently paying them within 10 days with the aim of trying to get that down to 7 days. So our payment processes have been sped up substantially, and particularly for SMEs, which I think is we just see as critical for the sector to improve the transformation in the sector and get these SMEs to grow. SLAs with other banks, we're busy negotiating SLAs at the moment or memorandums of understanding with Barsa and then the other banks around the implementation of the Help Me Buy a Home program. In terms of getting into the next level where we're going to talk about them helping with funding and getting into that joint funding of projects, that we haven't started that process yet. I think it's really around us making sure we understand the policy and understanding where we're going, and then we'll start getting into that. So, yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Bruce. It's important to state that the first time when we passed the FLISP policy, the finance link individual subsidy program, we signed up with the four major banks. We signed up with with FNB, with Nedbank, Standard Bank, and Absa. But if you look at the new FLISP policy, and this talks to some of the issues that were raised by Honorable Harold. The new FLISP policy has broadened the scope. It covers all the funders. It's also linked as well to the government employee housing scheme. So we're no longer only talking about the four major banks or those who belong to Barsa. We broaden the scope to cover all the financing institutions. There were two other questions that were asked. One was about the promulgation of the Act. When do we think the Act will be promulgated? And then the second one was about the exemption from the South African Reserve Bank. Can I ask Jan Maritz to answer that question about the South African Reserve Bank exemption? Jan?
Thank you, DG. The South African Reserve Bank exemption is required because the Banks Act states that when you use the word bank in the name of your business, you are then assumed to be regulated under the Banks Act. So because we have the word bank in the name of the Human Settlements Development Bank, we therefore need the exemption. The application has already been made, and we're waiting for the outcome of that application. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kian. Gwezi, do you want to give us an estimate on the timelines for the promulgation of the bill?
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Chair, you know, the process, you know, towards the introduction of the bill, you know, into Parliament, it will, you know, inter alia be dependent on the process of public comment pursuant to the approval of the bill, you know, for public comment by Cabinet. But we are looking at doing that simultaneously, Chair, you know, with the amendment of the business case. So, Chair, once we have finalized the process of Cabinet approval for public comment, we'll do it, you know, the public comment within 30 days. And after 30 days, we've received the comment. We'll, of course, within that particular process of 20 days, consider all the comments that we have received, that could have, you know, received from from the public comment process and therefore go straight to cabinet for introduction of the bill into parliament. So we want to do that and fast track it, you know, and do it, you know, simultaneously with any other amendment that we intend to do. So it will happen, DG, simultaneously, Chair, you know, and once we have obtained the particular approval and after the public comment process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ngwenya. That takes care of the questions that were asked by Honorable Mkhutu. There were comments that were asked by, that were made by Honorable Heron. The first one was about the structural challenges in the delivery of human settlements, the routine and the financing part of it. There was a comment about addressing the current housing program structure. I think your comment is that most of the challenges that we are faced with are structural challenges in the financing of human settlements, the routine. There was another comment about whether we're coming up with a different ownership model altogether, different kind of ownership model. And the last question was about whether we're creating, there are assets that can create that balance sheet. I guess in understanding the products and services of the bank, what the bank will be doing, I think it became very clear to us that we will have to present it our business case. And I think there was a proposal that we need to have a business case workshop with honorable members. The department can do that, we can facilitate that. It's in our interest to get the business case to be presented to you, because in the business case, we do stage some of the products and services that the bank will be responsible for. But you also have to look at the entire value chain of human settlements. For instance, if you look at HDA, HDA was established for land assembly and land development. So there are synergies. In fact, the three institutions have signed a memorandum of agreement, HDA, SHRA, and the NHFC, because we are of the view that there has to be more cooperation amongst the three entities. In fact, when we were working on the bill, there were people who were even recommending that you could easily amalgamate the three entities and form one big human settlements development, you know, bank, and there will be the property division aspect of it, and which takes care of all the property related aspects of our work. And then there will be a social housing aspect of it, where we take care of the social housing aspect of our work. If you look at NHFC currently, NHFC is the biggest funder of social housing. If you look at the all the financing institutions in that sector, in social housing in general, NHFC is playing a bigger role in social housing, in affordable rental in general. Where we want to go, we want to scale up on gap housing, affordable home ownership, so to speak, because that's one area where we're not doing very well. And that's the area where we can target people who earn too much to be considered by government, but they earn too little to be considered by financing institutions. So DFIs all around the world were established to deal with market failures. We always refer to them as the banks of the last resort. So we want this bank as well to take more risk without compromising the sustainability Honorable Sifai talked about. DFIs all around the world, they deal with market failures. They always balance between taking more risk and sustaining themselves, because the majority of DFIs, even in this country, are not getting money from government, so they have to be sustainable. They have to go to the capital market and they have to price the products accordingly so that they remain sustainability. So it's a delicate balancing act, taking more risk and also remaining sustainability. I think other DFIs like DBSA are dealing with those challenges. Land Bank as well, dealing with those challenges of keeping that balance between taking more risk, because we do want them to take more risk. The commercial banks are not going to take more risk and they're not going to provide housing to those who are considered to be in the cap market. So we will come and present the business case, discuss it with National Treasury. I think it's extremely important that we put maybe a day or two aside and go through the act itself, the draft bill, because we do have the draft bill, and also go through the business case. And we will share with you some of the comments that were raised by other strategic partners like banks, Reserve Bank, and National Treasury. There was a question about, I think we covered the question about the exemption. Then the question about the capitalization of the bank. We can take a decision now, because for all intents and purposes, we do have one DFI now. We moved as from the 1st of October 2018 to integrate the three entities, the three DFIs, Nature, RALF, and NHFC, into one entity under NHFC. You could argue that we already have an operating model to do what is expected of us. So we can move, the budget permits, and capitalize the entity now. That can be done. But it will have to come from the 30 billion rand budget that we are managing. We will have to capitalize in order to capitalize NHFC so that they can start doing the work that we would want this bank to do once it's established. We will have to top slice the 30 billion rand, and that may have an impact on the allocation of provinces and the capitals and the entities. If you top slice it, we can start small, but that decision is a decision that will have to be made by the minister, whether she would want to wait until the entity is established before it gets capitalized, or she would want to use the existing budget to get the entity capitalized. So that's within our control. Treasury made it clear that they won't capitalize until the entity is established. There was a comment again that was made about presenting the business case. Members, I think we'll do that, and we'll run that workshop. I think the department will take care of that. We've done it in the past where we had a workshop with members of the portfolio committee. We can do it again. The expertise, I think we made it clear that we would want to keep the expertise. There are people in NHFC and the three entities who have been working there for a very long time, and we would want to keep them. It's expensive to get these kinds of skills from the market. We compete with other entities who are paying very well, your DBSA and other banks, they pay very well. So we wouldn't want to lose any of that. I think that was made as a comment. There's a storyline that runs through all the comments about familiarizing members of the committee with the business case, workshopping it. I think that came from Honorable Smay as well, that we must have that workshop. We would want to discuss the products and services that this bank will be delivering. I think you need to familiarize yourself with that. There was a question about the delay, why it took us so long to process this bill. I think it's important to state that the former minister wanted, to put it bluntly, wanted this bank to be a deposit-taking retail bank, or put it differently, a deposit-taking state bank. We had to discuss with our colleagues at Treasury and the bank, and we finally managed to convince the minister that at this stage it may not be practically possible for us to create a deposit-taking bank, given the state of, you know, of the economy and also the state of our fiscals. Because if we create a deposit-taking bank, it would mean that we must comply with Basel IV and capital adequacy rules in general, which I don't think is practical at this stage. But the bank can grow if in the near future or in the distant future, we want to convert the DFI to a deposit-taking bank or a state deposit-taking bank. That can be done. But what is practical for now is to make sure that this is a DFI. It took us long for us to reach that consensus around whether this bank should be a retail deposit-taking bank or a wholesale bank in general. So we discussed it with former board members of NHFC and the former CEO of NHFC, but we finally agreed almost a year ago that this will be a DFI. It will not be a deposit-taking bank. That item was a very difficult item to finalize, which is why we delayed. And it was going to be difficult for the drafters of the bill to go ahead and finalize the bill without resolving that matter. So that's what caused the delay. I think now that it's resolved, we will be in a position to get this bill out of the way, and I don't think it should take us time. The person, if there is a question that I've left out, my colleagues will assist me and you can remind us as well so that we can attend to all the questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. Can I get any member who wants to follow up on the matter? Honorable Heron.
Sishwai.
And then you'll followed by Honorable Sishwai. Honorable Heron, and you'll follow by Honorable Sishwai. Thanks.
I'm sure maybe it's not so much a follow-up if we're going to have the workshop, but I think that just a comment that if the bank is going to operate, I believe, within the current housing program, then I cannot see that it's going to achieve much more than what we're achieving now, which is insufficient, I think, to address the needs of housing. So I don't necessarily want to get into this in detail if you are going to call a workshop, which I would welcome, and then we can debate it there. But just a comment, I'm concerned that the way that DG is presented it is that this bank will operate using the current housing model, which I don't think works at all. So I would like that workshop if we can have it. Thank you.
Honorable Sishwai.
Thank you, Chair. If there's a question, DG, that I didn't get your view, I made a proposal that one of the issues that becomes a surety for National Treasury and banks is that a business case or a program of this nature should ensure that there are very clear principles of sustainability, issues of socioeconomic, issues of environmental, so that the as we say, this bank is to transform the human settlement sector. You are aware of many problems that are in the sector. So it would be proper that we build this bank towards the future, that it would be a future solution within the human settlement. I made a proposal that in your compliance, how I wish that you could add the sustainability of this particular program. I don't know where you could fit in, but my worry is that I don't see it anywhere in the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sikhaya. Honorable Mokgotso.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not satisfied about the answer given to me, the answer of the first question that I asked, whereby I asked when is the Human Settlement Development Bank is expected to be introduced in Parliament. The response that we got is that the time frame is dependent on the process of public comment and so on. I mean, I think by now the NHFC should be knowing when exactly are they going to start the process of public comment, and then when is it going to start and when is it going to end, and more or less when are the other processes that lead to this bill being presented to Parliament, you know, going to take place. So the answer is vague. Does it mean that it is possible that this process will go on without any specific time frame until next year, December 2023? Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson? Chairperson?
Yes, ma'am.
Have you heard me?
Yes, I did.
Yes, I need clarity. At least there must be some sort of time frame given. Otherwise, this is going to be, it's going to be going on and on and on without any ending. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mokgotso, DG and your team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
DG, I see the hands of DG. I see the hands of Mr. Gordon.
He should be responding.
Yes, probably wants to respond. Can we give him chance and then you'll come late?
Yes, we'll start with him. Bruce?
Thanks. Yes, I think to answer Honourable Heron's questions about how we're going to change things, I think the goal of the Human Settlements Development Bank has to be very different from carrying on doing the same old thing and hoping we're going to achieve something different. Currently, in the our mandate is to address market failure in the gap marketing space, and that area to clear the backlog of housing there. Looks like we need to provide somewhere in the region of 200,000 homes a year. Currently, that market is acquiring 20,000 homes a year. So obviously, we can't carry on the same way, and we can't expect government funding to be able to do that. You know, FLSP can only do so much. I mean, I think we're talking 3,000 or 4,000 FLSP homes a year is what we're looking at. So we've got to do things differently. We've got to work as partners with the financial institutions locally and with international DFIs, and to make sure that things happen. Also, we need to ensure that there are construction companies that can do this. And to that, in that regard, we are looking at how do we develop more construction companies so that we can get these 200,000 houses as HSDB, having construction companies that can do it. And we've got projects in the city of Cape Town and now one in Nelson Mandela Bay, where we're starting to develop contractors and funding them. And that way we feel we can actually start to gear the industry up, and that gearing up will transform the industry completely in our view, and in both from a ability to deliver and also from an ownership perspective. But so that is what we're looking at, completely changing the method of delivery, that we're not relying on government funding, but we actually are looking at how do we create the models where people can borrow to buy houses, and also that organizations can borrow to build those houses. And in addition, we're looking at obviously the social housing and the affordable rentals. How do we fund those to make sure that this huge backlog is addressed? And it's something we're starting to say, well, how do we start gearing up for it now? What do we need to do with our current balance sheet? And making sure that we start that process even before the legislation is in place. And that's things that we are starting to look at now. In terms of optimizing our balance sheet, really what we're talking about there is we're sitting on too much cash that should be out there having homes built, not sitting on our balance sheet. And that's what we, when we talk about optimizing, we need to start right now getting that sorted out. And that's what we are looking at. How are we going to do? We had a strat session with our board over the weekend, and we are busy building ourselves towards almost being as much of the Human Settlements Development Bank as we can now without the legislation in place, but making sure that once the legislation is in place, we gear up rapidly and are able to deliver whatever is necessary. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Bruce.
Can you come closer to your mic? Your voice is too soft.
Okay. In the room where I am. Can you hear me now? Am I audible now?
Yes, you are, but your voice is still very soft.
Yeah.
You are. We can proceed.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start with I think your point is valid.
Sorry, Chair, but the DG is not audible at all. Sorry to interrupt.
Chair, DG is not DG. Audible. I think there's also echo. I don't know whether you have many gadgets. Otherwise, DG? I didn't hear DG from the beginning. Thanks.
DG, I think we are still struggling to hear you.
Okay, Chair, let me
we can hear you.
A different gadget. Can you hear me now?
You have disappeared.
Can you hear me now?
You have disappeared. Maybe, DG, maybe go out and come back. Or use another gadget. Do we have anybody in the department who wants to speak to any other things when we're still waiting for the DG? Mr. Ngwenya?
Chairperson, am I audible?
Now it's better.
Okay, let's sort that. We've moved. Let's take that out. We've changed gadgets. I hope I'm audible now. Chairperson, the question by Honorable Sikwai is valid, and it's a valuable question. We take it as a recommendation. They normally refer to it as a triple bottom line, which is about people, prosperity, and the planet. That's what sustainability is all about. Gone are the days where the banks should simply look at the financial bottom line. So you have to make sure that you cover all aspects of sustainability, including the environment. So we took that as a proposal, that those principles must be adhered to, and they must also find an expression in the business plan, in the business case. The question by Honorable Heron is, yes, we will have an opportunity to discuss it at the workshop, but I guess the starting point is the housing policy itself. I think we jumped around a lot without sorting out certain things first. It was expected that we will have the white paper in the last term of government. Our plan was to release the white paper, which would have made it possible for us to review the housing code. It's kind of strange that we're still referring to the housing code when we have moved to human settlements. We should be talking about the human settlements code
because that's where the policies that inform the work that we are doing are. So it's expected that we will review the housing code so that it talks to the work that we are doing. And ideally, we wanted to start there, review the code before you get to fix all these other things. The challenge is that it takes a little bit of time to get to that policy environment reviewed. The last time we reviewed the housing code was in 2009. And that's more than 10 years. I think it's long overdue now that we review the housing code so that we can address some of the shortcomings in the housing policy. Because the housing policy has moved without, if you look at it carefully, we're dealing with FLISP. So we're picking up one part of the policy, the housing code, and we're fixing it when we're supposed to be fixing the entire environment of the housing policies. So I agree with you. Maybe we have to do first things first. In the workshop, we can also make the presentation of the work that we have done so far in reviewing the 2009 housing code. You will ask Ms. Boutelis to make that presentation together with Dr. Sokop, who started the process of reviewing the housing code. So, Chairperson, we agree with Honorable Heron that at the workshop, these things will be discussed and we will cover some of the policy issues around human settlements. Thank you very much.
The time frame, DG, which was asked by Honorable Mokhoti.
Chairperson, we're running behind schedule on this bill. Our intention was to get the bill approved as early as 2020. We have to go back. I don't want to give time now without looking at the program. Remember, we are governed by what we always get from justice as the legislative program. So they will be able to tell us whether we will be able to pass it on before the end of this year. I would request that we get given time to come back to you on this one so that we don't respond impassively.
Thank you, DG. And your team, I think there is a consensus that we we need to workshop or follow-up workshop on the matter, particularly because we are a new committee and new members, and it will be helpful to empower us going further to discuss the when it is tabled to Parliament. Even will continuously engage on you, but we want to request that it should be fast tracked so that we're able to transform the property industry itself and the and avail resources for those that need you to help them to buy a house, as you call it, your program. DM, you want to you say something on your last word?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. It's clear what you've raised is quite important, that we need to fast track the process and come back to you. I think I'm covered also by DG. It is clear that members are not quite happy, more especially in terms of the time frames raised by Mr. Honorable Mokhoto. And I think what is clear now, we've taken what you've raised, we've taken your advice and your comments. We need to go back and look at ourselves and how do we come back and be clear on time frames. And I do understand the processes that are there, but they need to be pushed by us so that when we come back, we're able to say on such and such a date, we'll be going to the community and do this and comment, so that you have all the stages and then we tell you where we are, and it looks like what we have right now, you are not satisfied. It is clear, but we'll make sure we'll improve and come back to you. We need to come back quickly, Chair, and see how is it that we're going to make it be understandable to you in terms of the time frames. And also comments are taking time sometimes. It's not us that are pushing, but we need to have dates of all the areas so that you are satisfied. Again, Chair, I think I want to thank you for your time. Thank you for the time of the honorable members for coming and also advising us on some issues. And I want to thank also the team from the department, and let us go back and refine our work and come back to you and share. I'm in the rural area of KZN. I was cut off in some areas, and especially the DG. I didn't hear DG at all. But nevertheless, Chair, I want to thank everybody for this meeting. We will improve when coming back, DG, to you, Chair, to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DM and the team of the department. We will actually diarize the workshop as soon as possible so that members can have an opportunity to interact with yourselves and looking at the broader programs of human settlement. Thank you very much, DM and your team. Can we then go to the second item? Koliswa, is the minutes?
Hello, Chair.
Can you present the minutes?
I'm sorry, Chair, are we expected to be here when you...
No, you can be released, the DM and your team. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Koliswa.
Hello, Chair.
Yes.
Okay.
No, just the your computer. Koliswa. Okay.
Hello, Chair. The minutes were circulated, Chairperson, yesterday. So I think I will just go on page by page. If it's not fine with you, Chairperson, and the members.
Yes, proceed, Koliswa. Actually, the minutes are the minutes that we have sent back that Koliswa must add the deliberations of members. So members said you can go to those deliberations and allow members to look at them. Can we get any correction on the minutes?
Chair, it's Honorable Powell. Can we just go through these pages, just the amendments? Can Carly just talk us through what she's amended?
The only part that has been added, Madam Powell, Member Powell, is the deliberations and responses by the department. So from number six.
You can take us through on Kholiso. There is no harm in taking us through.
Okay, Chair. On the deliberations, that is the minutes of the 20th of April 2022. Members sought clarity on the intergovernmental relations vis-a-vis district development model and whether the DDM was aligned to the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation Framework for purposes of reporting. Clarity was sought on the unblocking of projects during the current financial year, particularly on whether the unblocking process was to start with houses left unfinished in 2018, and especially unfinished houses in Moses Kotane and KK Kaunda. More details sought on the unblocking of projects, which was understood to be a three-year program, as reported. For members, it wanted to know whether the department had received plans from provinces on the unblocking of projects, and yes, this would allow committee to monitor progress. Members indicated that some of the listed priorities were not specific with respect to the number of mud houses, houses with asbestos roofing, targets for service site, timeframes for digitization of housing beneficiary lists. For the members, for the issue of both mud houses and asbestos eradication has to be approached on two fronts, namely through the rural development program as well as through the emergency housing funding, respectively. Clarity was sought on the issue of title deeds with respect to pre-94 versus V94, pre and post 94 housing stock. The nature of the benefit in respect of the 40% set aside for designated groups and the measures to ensure that this was implemented and why it has not been factored in the terms of division of revenue. No exact targets. No exact targets on the contribution of the construction sector on the on job creation. The members welcome the national priorities as had been pronounced by MINMEC, particularly on the digitization on the housing beneficiary list, and this would ensure transparency and accountability. For members, it was critical to have an idea of the department's time frame for its implementation. Members also called for measures to deal with illegal occupation of land and government response to prevent construction of homes and settling of people on unsuitable land, such as riverbanks, wetlands, and floodplains. What was being done to deal with the issue of illegal occupation of land, illegal selling of subsidy houses prior to expiry of the 8-year period, so-called the preemptive clause, and the illegal occupation of houses. And clarity was sought in reduction of employee compensation, comments on mining counts. And the responses from the department. In responding to some of the ongoing issues, the minister indicated that the department sought to contribute towards the economic recovery plan while ensuring alignment with provinces and human settlements entities. She stated that the department is to adopt a phased-in approach with respect to unblocking blocked projects over a three-year period, as it has been highlighted in the annual performance plan. On the issue of IGR versus DDM, it was admitted that the government was trying to have a single and a common plan across the country and that there was no contradiction between the IGR and DDM. Thus, there was no conflict between the two, but complementary. On the issue of eradication of mud houses, this was a program under the rural development framework, and it was under prioritization and that there was no misalignment in terms of policy. It was simply being flagged under the rural development program and was to be included in the provincial business plans. Similarly, with the issue of asbestos removal, which has been done and completed as allocation has been made. Furthermore, the department indicated that the use of the stores was prohibited due to its health hazard implications from the previous dispensation, together with the related asbestos with health, which has both health and financial implications. It also stated that with respect to pre-94 stock, this was not a moving target, and hence there's a need to be a concrete plan to dispose of the stock, and that there has to be collaboration with the Department of Labor and Department of Environment. On the issue of eradicating mud houses, this was reported to be already covered under the rural development policy. However, it was pointed out that this also require a climate mitigation strategy, as mud houses are unable to stand storm and other inclement weather conditions. The department indicated that a people's housing process could also be used to deal with mud houses, and that it was not prescribing what program to use to deal with mud houses. For the department, even with the issue of asbestos roofing, a combination of programs could be used, including the PHP. Thus, a variety of programs may be utilized to deal with the foregoing issues. The committee was also informed that the department had adopted a stand against the location of housing on unsuitable and unsuitable land, particularly against unauthorized and illegal occupation of floodplains, wetlands, and riverbanks in order to mitigate the effect of climate change. It was stated that the impact of recent heavy rains necessitated the need to revisit the issues of flood lines. On the issue of the percentage set aside for designated groups, the department indicated that the emphasis was on 30% women, 10% youth, and 5% persons living with disabilities ownership of business, and this has been endorsed by MINEC. It was also reported that establishment of panels was underway in order to know exactly as to who these beneficiaries in terms of designated group are in every metropolitan municipality and province. It was pointed out that there was a need activism, agency, as well as a program and project implementation required to ensure its successful implementation. It was also reported that percentages set aside was included in the division of revenue as a priority item, but had not been ring-fenced. It was pointed out though. That it doesn't require requiring fencing, and that it was a standing item in both the Director's General cluster, which is economic and social. In respect of IGR, this was said to be a legislated mandate to hold provincial reviews on performance. The committee was also informed of provincial outreach programs run by the ministry to monitor service delivery, including quarterly reports. On the issue of the increase in budget, this presented the breakdown as well as the 20% set aside for operational budget in terms of economic classification. The committee was also informed that it was the operational grant that was transferred to entities in the form of transfers and subsidies. The increase in the operational budget was attributed to procurement of laptops necessitated by the requirement to work from home due to outbreak of COVID-19 pandemic. The increase in goods and services was reported to be based on the allocation letter from the National Treasury. It was also stated that the global picture in respect of over expenditure vis-a-vis under expenditure was to be dealt with during the fourth quarter reporting period. With respect to job creation, the estimate was 200,000 jobs and 800,000 individuals set to undergo formal job training. And the foregoing figures were said to be based on a formula in terms of a framework that allows for quantification of figures in terms of job
jobs to be created. In respect of the 40% set aside for the designated group, it was reported that as per the main make approval, there were specific targets for each category. The department undertook to provide figures in writing. With respect to the unblocking of block projects, the committee was informed that the department had delayed the approval of business plan in order to ensure that there is alignment. It was reported that there were more than 600 block projects and that the department was set to embark on a data cleansing exercise in order to obtain a clear picture. It was also reported that a provincial business plan were to be signed on 29 April 2022. On the issue of the digitization of housing beneficiary list, it was stated that the National Housing Needs Register required to be automated in order to ensure both transparency and accountability. The department indicated that maintenance of the data was critical and that part of the process of digitizing was the managing and updating data throughout the three spheres in order to have credible beneficiary data. In terms of the time frames, it indicated that the department was seized this current financial year with planning and feasibility study of the envisaged ICT systems and business processes. On the issue of selling of houses to undocumented foreign nationals was reported to be illegal. That is, such transactions involving illegal foreign nationals were said to be against the law. However, documented foreign nationals may or can participate in capital market and in terms of law, can also participate in the housing market. Furthermore, it was also stated that in terms of the rural urban migration, the priority was income generation, which tended to confirm that some people moved to urban centers in search of an income and not necessary for a house to own. Reference was made to 2008 study on Danone, which revealed that most of RDP houses have been sold. With respect to illegal occupation and invasion of land, the department indicated that it was imperative to move within 48 hours to deal with such, and that the PI Act regulates as well as talks to the enforcement of bylaws, including the issue of illegal occupation of land. On the issue of reduction of employee compensation, the department indicated that there was an inverse relationship from programs to program, as well as a reduction of targets for program four, which was said to explain the reduction in the allocation for employee compensation. Mining towns were said to cover six provinces and that there were four different programs dealing with town characterized characterized by sunset operations such as Blackstone, where mining activity was in decline, and on the other hand, Sunrise operation, where mining operations were on rise. Thank you, Chairperson.
That is the deliberations that were supposed to be included in the meeting. Can I get any hands to, if there is any correction or addition or amendment? I don't see any hands. Can we then get the mover for the adoption of the minutes?
Chair.
As the Honorable Sikoi.
There's a correction that perhaps we need to make in the, there's something about activism. I think it's not a, just a correction of a structuring the term there. If perhaps the colleague could go to that one.
Okay.
We are losing the members' slide, Chair.
Probably, yeah, here is it, Honorable Sakai. It was pointed out that there was a need activism agency as well as the program. What is the correction, Honorable Member?
It was pointed out that there was a need activism. Can it be written differently? It was pointed out that there was an activism need. I may be wrong, Chair. That's English. I didn't hear it well when it says it was need activism. Can't we say it was pointed out that there was an activism need? And there is another one that talks about houses that are given to foreign nationals. Can we go to that paragraph?
Okay.
Where are my spectacles? I don't know them.
Is it? Don't go on the issue of the selling of houses on undocumented foreign nationals. What is the issue, Honorable Sakai?
The issue, Chair, I thought we resolved that it is illegal to give houses to foreign nationals, worse when they are selling them out. I think there was an interpretation about what the piece of legislation is saying about who must get an RDP house.
I think the sentences reflect that, Honorable Sai. This was the response of the department, which says on the issue of the selling of houses to undocumented foreign nationals was reported to be illegal. That is, such transaction involving illegal foreign nationals were said to be against the law. However, documented foreign nationals may or can participate in capital market and in terms of the law. Those that are when they explained it was that it's illegal for foreign nationals to benefit from the RDP, but documented foreign nationals, they can participate in capital market and buy their houses, not the RDP.
Can I ask a question, Chair, just a question of clarity? When we talk about capital market, if my daughter who benefited the RDP house is selling that house to a foreign national, whether documented or not documented, is that capital market speak about that issue?
Not necessarily, Honorable Sakai. You remember I can't remember whether still this one. We're saying that no beneficiary is allowed to sell the houses. If he has not reached 8 years, and there is a the act, actually it says that. Or the housing code, it says that as people sell these houses, even after 8 years, the first
people should be government so that they can can then use the process to can use the government to continue giving people homes or houses. So the issue here, the question was the illegal occupation of houses by the foreign nationals, and the answer was it is illegal.
Okay.
So, but with the question that you raised, but we know that our people, they continue to sell those houses. In that discussion, I think, I'm not sure whether it was Gauteng oversight to come, or I can't remember which discussion we had that discussion that department should educate our people to understand that part in the act where it doesn't give them that latitude to sell houses for to anybody. The point of departure should be government.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get you.
Chairperson, I was going to suggest that why don't we relook at that phrase, because it gives different interpretations, and like you say, the issue of the point here is that beneficiaries cannot just sell houses willy-nilly, whether foreign national or not. But like you say, after 8 years, and the first buyer who can buy that house is government. So I think we need to rephrase it. I don't know how, because now it's like when we say the house is illegal. Yes, it's illegal to sell houses to foreign nationals or not. It's even worse even if it's sold to people who are not even legal in the country. So I don't know, but I just thought that maybe we need to rephrase it. Thanks.
Okay. I think it was a response from the department responding to the question of illegal selling of houses. I'm not sure whether the English colleagues are you, but I don't see the problem. Maybe it's my English. I don't see any problem with the wording, because it was specifically for undocumented illegal or undocumented people. But I was just explaining to Honorable Sufai that in the other discussion that we have, which is not part of this minute, this issue was clarified further by the department.
Okay. Kolisa?
Hello, Chair.
Yes. Are you able to put it such that...
Can the member send it to me in writing? The suggestion.
Okay. Okay. Can we then get the mover for the adoption of the minutes without I think with what is important, we should not change the content of what the response was from the department. It should be the issue of the English only.
Okay. Yes.
Yes. Can I get the mover for the adoption of the minutes with that corrections of the English?
I move for the adoption, Chair, the correction of the English.
Honorable Sopasingo has moved. Can we get the second, Honorable Emma.
Chairperson, I've not seen my
Honorable Emma. I can't
Hello,
unfortunately second because I had COVID and was not in this meeting. So unfortunately.
Hello, Chair. And yes. Honorable cannot move because she was not there.
Okay, withdrawn. And Honorable Emma, I see you have raised the hand. Honorable Zeki.
Chair, I want to move, but I wanted to make some little contribution, not on the minutes. I'm fine with the minutes. But, you know, as we discuss this matter of 8 years, I'm just thinking that maybe as a committee in this meeting, we can agree that the department must give us a report in relation to challenges that they faced on people who are selling these houses before 8 years. If it can, they can do just a sample of that challenge of 8 years, or we can take a and we can do an oversight.
Because we are discussing the minutes now, maybe what you can say is that let's put it as an agenda at some point.
Okay.
So that okay. it come correctly and be dealt properly.
Okay.
Honorable Powell, no. Your hand
then
is
I'm,
still up.
Then I move, Chair, for the adoption.
Honorable Powell, move. Honorable Powell, your hands are still up.
Yes, I just wanted to ask you a follow-up question on an outstanding report, but I wanted to ask you if we've got more minutes to approve, or can I just ask you now? We're just waiting for two reports from the HDA still.
Honorable Powell, we're dealing with the minutes. We're not done with the minutes.
Yeah, so the question to you is, at what point during this meeting can we add a matters arising for once we're done with the minutes? I just don't want you to close the meeting before I can ask the question.
We're not closing the meeting. We're far from closing the meeting. We still have a second quarter report.
Okay, but my question is, at what point can I ask a question to you
now
on that?
We're dealing with the minutes. You're supposed to put that on the agenda, Honorable Powell.
No, I can ask you any question during a committee meeting with
the minutes of working, the agenda has been adopted in your presence, Honorable Member. Can I get the second?
Rising from minutes.
Honorable, you are saying?
Chair, we don't need to have a fight about this. I'm not arguing with you. I'm asking
I'm saying...
I have a rising from minutes, and I want to ask you, at what point, Chairperson, is it best for me to put my hand up to ask that question? I'm not fighting with you about a substantive matter. I'm just wanting to ask you a very simple question, and I'm asking for your guidance.
There is no matters arising from the minutes.
Chairperson,
we're correcting the minutes arising. No, we're not yet there. We don't even have that item.
Maybe I'm not explaining myself. I'm asking you to tell me at what point is best to discuss that.
But I'm saying, Honorable Member, there is no item of matters arising on the minutes. So now we're adopting the minutes.
But we've just taken inputs on the minutes, Chair.
No, it's correction. That's why I've clarified. I'm clarifying the correction of we're correcting the minutes.
Okay, because I've sent you two emails and you haven't responded. So now I'm asking you in committee. I need feedback.
Honorable Powell, can I get the second for the adoption of the minutes?
We don't need your shop.
Honorable Powell, can you put your... Can you, if not, if
it's
Honorable Powell,
you are
can
right
you
to
put your hand down? Honorable, can I get the seconder for the minute?
You've already got a seconder. Seki seconded these minutes.
No, from who? Who actually proposed for the adoption? Honorable Koni indicated that they said that it was not part of the minutes. We've received the apology. So I'm saying, can I get the second for the minutes?
Don't entertain the Honorable
Chair. Powell. The minutes are seconded by Malachi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Malachi. Can we get another set of the minutes?
Hello, Chair.
Yes.
The minutes of the 21st April.
Okay, can you go to the deliberations?
Can I also read, Chair?
Yes, Honorable, Polisa.
Okay, on the deliberations, the members were concerned about the number of people who ought to benefit from the provision of the National Housing Finance Corporation, whilst there were no funds set aside for service sites. Clarity was sought on what would happen to those who were not qualifying for the bond. Clarity was sought on why NHFC partnered with the City of Cape Town in the incubator program and whether it will be rolling out similar projects to other metropolitan municipalities. The members sought clarity from the Property Practitioners Regulatory Authority on the turnaround time for the recruitment process for the filling of critical positions, particularly that the chief executive officer was suspended. The chief financial officer was on acting position and there were no internal auditors. This would result in the entity going back to the qualified audit report while it had worked hard to receive the unqualified report. Clarity was sought from the Property Practitioners Regulatory on the reasons for taking pensions out of Human Resource Committee. Clarity was sought on what were the timeframes for the establishing the Transformation Knowledge Center licensing regime. It was further sought clarity from the CISOs on how many previous disadvantaged individuals have been trained as executive managers. Also, clarity was sought on the reduction in the amount allocated for the training for 2022-23 financial year. Wanted to know why it is reduced while the backlog of empowering previously disadvantaged groups. Clarity was further sought on what is the source strategy to have more community schemes and to lobby or recruit people to be part of the scheme, and how was the entity assisting them. The NHFC informed the committee that it was aiming at moving the NHFC to the new Human Settlements Development Bank, and it was its priority. Discussions with the department were underway. Also, the bank would play an important role in eradicating the problems of housing countrywide. With regard to FLISP, it was stated that the policy was not about mortgage, but will deal with permission to occupy. It was going to get into rural space and avail more housing opportunities. And a memorandum of understanding was signed with major banks. The NHFC undertook to present the number of jobs created in its future meeting. With regards to the incubator program with the City of Cape Town, it was reported that the City of Cape Town requested the entity to assist it, and the program was going to be to yield 10,000 jobs. However, the program was going to be rolled out to other metropolitan municipalities as there was a deal with the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan Municipality. The PPRA informed the committee that the entity was going to improve the policy on the protection of whistleblowers. It was further reported that the suspension of the chief executive officer was done to allow the investigation to be conducted without interruptions. The chairperson informed the committee that the CEO was served with the allegations, as it was not going to be easy to carry on investigation in her presence. The critical position within the entity were mainly due to the transition from the Estate Agency Affairs Board to the Property Practitioners Regulatory Authority. The board had to consider new organizational structure with the new entity's new mandate. Thank you, Chair.
Any corrections, honorable members, or amendment on the minutes? Nothing
Honorable Powell?
I'm still waiting for my question, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Zeki, can you mute? Can I get the mover for the adoption of the minutes?
I move, Chair.
Honorable Zeki moves. Can I get the seconder? Can I get the seconder?
I second the adoption, Chair.
Thank you very much. The minutes have been seconded. That was the last minute, Poliswa. Or do you have another minute?
Yes, still have three chairperson to come.
Oh, okay. Put it on the screen.
Okay.
Hello, Chair. The minutes for 4 May, which was the adoption of the budget report.
Okay. Can we then scroll it down?
You know, the adoption of the minutes and the report. The report was adopted. The Democratic Alliance and the EFF objected to the adoption of the report. Thanks, Chair.
Can I get the mover for the adoption of the minutes?
I move the adoption of the minutes, Chair.
I second, Chair.
Fifai moves, Malaji second. Thank you very much. Can we then put the, you said?
11 May, Chair.
Okay, the you can then take us to the relief, the deliberations.
Okay, Chair. The members bemoaned the fact that the presentation on intervention and the relief efforts to assist communities that had been affected by the recent floods lacked clear time frames. For the members, the situation on the ground was dreadful, particularly with regards to the state of informal settlements, and that prevailing condition has resulted in adverse health conditions such as those afflicting children, namely bronchitis disorder. Clarity was sought on whether the 143 million on the informal settlement upgrading grant was being used. For the members, it was time to work together. However, it demanded the lack of coordinated response in terms of the disaster relief efforts. The members highlighted what it lacked the information for councillors to work on, including failure to the expert to meet since the announcement of the setting of the war room. Reference was made to the community consisting of 160 people that were said to have been passed from Umlaz to Yellowwood Park and still without the relief. The members sought clarity on the statement contained on the presentation on the disaster relief, not sure of quantity to be used, not sure of impact on current budget. For the members, there was a lack of leadership from the local municipality. They inquired what real-time assistance was the department providing in terms of coordinated response. Reference was made to the failure to have land cleared in the aftermath of the flood disaster. Members wanted to know how much of the emergency grant was going to be to the provincial department and to the metropolitan municipality in KwaZulu-Natal, and how much of the emergency funding was coming from the entities. They stressed that with respect to conditional grants, provinces have to follow conditions associated with each grant. Clarity was sought whether the department was going to provide compensation or assistance to the private sector that had suffered loss as the consequence of lack of infrastructure maintenance. The members wanted to know who was managing the awarding of contracts for the temporary residential units in Ithekwini, and whether it was not possible to offer starter kits in the interim to the disparate. How long were the communities expected to be accommodated within the TRUs? Reference was made to NYSNA experience and whether the TRUs were to become permanent. Anticipated timeframes for completion of evaluation. It also inquired as when the process of construction TRUs was set to start, including timeframes to respond to the disaster in order to manage expectations. The members welcomed the district development model commitment to spatial transformation. However, wanted to know whether the 136 voluntary development areas were situated on the urban edge, and inquired on how to ensure that spatial development happens as planned, with reference to the number of car tactics project densification, whether it would not be possible to have a conglomeration of grants in terms of alignment of spending among the three spheres in a special manner in order to achieve integrated socio-economic communities. How were the mud houses to be replaced, and whether these were to be replaced with the BNG? What material was to be used in replacing mud houses? Time frames for the construction of emergency houses and processes to be followed. For the members, what was being referred to as a special transformation has to situated within the context of rural urban divide, and also be located with the context of spatial equality vis-a-vis spatial inequality. Therefore, there was a need to be a clear, dedicated plan to address the foregoing through spatial planning and development. The members also bemoaned construction in rural communities that takes place without any town planning, some level of organization, management of land, as well as lack of bulk infrastructure. It was the members' view that 30% of the budget should be set aside for bulk infrastructure, and hence the members posed the question as to what extent does budget allocation prioritize rural areas. On the issue of the system of land tenure, the members inquired on how the department was dealing with the issue of those people who have since built themselves quality houses within rural areas within the context of rural development and within the context of the conundrum of spatial equality vis-a-vis spatial inequality. On the issue of refusal of communities to be relocated from disaster-prone areas, the members argued that this refusal has to be located within the context of the unavailability of basic infrastructure elsewhere, whether the department was using resident engineers and other related technical capacity in dealing with the disaster relief, or whether it was using outsourced technical capacity. With regard to the development of integrated informal information system, the member cited that there was no mention of SARS or SASA system within the context of WDP. For the members, it was imperative to have integrated information system within government, as this would assist in targeting correctly. Thus, one needs to be able to have an integrated response on the part of the government with respect to socioeconomic information. The members wanted to know why the municipal infrastructure grant allocated to Gauteng was lower than that for Limpopo and Mpumalanga, as reflected in the presentation.
With regard to the Northwest Province, the members sought clarity on what was meant by the phrase, a small number was affected in the Northwest. The member further inquired on the distinction between IGR versus CDM list with individual versus the individual subsidy and MIG versus USDG. With regard to the DDM, the members requested more detail in respect of projects per region and what the consequences of unfinished projects are. With regard to the FLISP, the members raised the issue of willingness or not on the part of the bank to extend funding in the context of the then practice called redlining and whether this was still the case. For the members, the district development model should assist in promoting collaborative relationship among the various spheres of government in order to do away with this.
By the way, you have left the meeting. The minutes. No, Grady.
Hello, Chair. Chairperson?
Proceed, Kolisa. Proceed.
Okay. With regard to the members inquired as to whether the department sees itself with a respect of two extremes, namely the process of gentrification and on the other extreme rapid degeneration. Rapid inner cities such as Hillbro due to illegal immigration, creeping in of criminality, hijacking of buildings, etc. Flat rating with regards to valuation in rural areas and to what extent were these factors had a bearing on assessing funding from the banks, whether there were any opportunities created in terms of job creation and skills development. On the issue of available department subsidies, the department undertook to share policy documents with the committee. With regard to spatial transformation and the situation of priority development areas, the department has made a reference to contradictions with respect to areas that fall outside the urban edge, Tulamduana in Johannesburg, as well as the point in Cape Town, which was said to be excluded as a restructuring zone. The department alluded to funding enforcement, which requires for funding to be invested in the priority development areas, and that PDAs do cover most of the areas situated on the urban edge. The committee was also informed that through investment within the inner city, such as that in Joburg, has attracted the availability of additional housing units. On the issue of additional funds for the KZN province, the department indicated that there were no additional funds that have been received from the National Treasury and no funds has been paid to KZN. It's reported that instead, the National Department has asked both the province and the Metropolitan Municipality to reprioritize their respective allocation. In terms of Section 19 of the Division of Revenue Act, the National Department has asked the province to relook at its business plan in order to respond to recent floods, and that the province has agreed to reprioritize within its allocation. It was reported that 922 million was a reprioritization from the provincial allocation. With regards to Etekwini Metropolitan, the department indicated that since the financial year for the metro was only scheduled to end on 30 June 2022, the reference was made to a National Treasury circular published on reprioritization, asking the metro to reprioritize its allocation of 582 million to cover any disaster situation that may affect the country. However, the metro indicated that it could not reprioritize as it has no additional funds available and that all grants were committed. On the issue of flood relief vouchers, not a single voucher of 8,000 has been issued, as the details were being worked out. On the possibility of extending assistance to private property owners who may have had their properties damaged as a consequence of the recent floods, the department indicated that the law does not allow for the department to cover private property damage due to recent flood disasters. However, private property owners may have claims processed through the South African Special Risk Insurance Association. The deputy minister proposed that there should be a joint meeting with the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs in order to have an opportunity to engage on the notion of the DDM. The committee subsequently recommended that there should be that the department should provide data kits to the beneficiaries affected by disaster, and they should share the policy document on various subsidy categories on offer or available, and present the updated list of priority development areas. Thank you, Chair.
More amendment on the minutes?
Adopt, Chair.
Honorable Zeki, move for the adoption, and then can I get the second?
I second the adoption, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sir. Kholiswa, can we then have allow Sabelo to present the report of the second quarter?
The last session.
No, it's 12 o'clock. Kholiswa will then take those minutes to another meeting.
All right.
Sabelo?
Yes, Chair. Good morning, say good day, honorable members. I'm going to take you through the second quarter report. This the presentation was done in 23 February 2002, and the report provides for deliberation and observation and recommendations by the committee. And the report is based on the adjusted estimates of the national expenditure and section 32 of national treasury. Bullet number two, it deals with the overall expenditure by the department, which is also followed by expenditure per program. And it details expenditure on program number one, which is administration, and then it is followed by a section on performance by program number one. With regards to the second program, which is integrated human settlements planning and development, the section also deals with the expenditure, and it is followed by the performance in relation to the target that they have set. Program number three, informal settlements, also follows the same logic, where it talks about the expenditure and also the performance by the program. Also, program number four, which is rental and social housing, talks about the expenditure and performance. And lastly, the program number five, which is affordable housing, talks about spending and also performance in the program. Honorable members, I'm doing this because the report was sent to members yesterday. this is just a generic way of writing the report. I think with your permission, Chairperson, what is critical is that we go line by line in observations and recommendations. So after, just a minute. So after the department presented, the committee made the following observations and recommendations, and these recommendations must be implemented by the minister in the department. So observation 3.1 is that the department had 58 vacant posts, which translates to 9.7 vacancy rate. The committee welcomed the progress made in filling these positions. However, there was a concern that the filling of posts was taking too long. Recommendation ensured that vacancy rate is at 0% by fast-tracking the filling of vacant posts with qualified and experienced individuals. Chairperson, do you want me to read all the observations or one by one?
Okay. Just present the observation and the recommendation, and then members will then come back to talk to them.
Okay, thank you, Chair. 3.2, that the macro policy of affordable housing was not clearly defined. Furthermore, it was not clear what the policy was intending to achieve in a long term. Recommendation ensured that macro policy of affordable housing is clearly defined and has long-term policy goals. There should be an alignment of policy with the relevant stakeholders to ensure that the end product, which is human settlements, provides all aspects of sustainable and integrated human settlements. Number 3.3, that there was low spending on the informal settlements partnership grant, which leads to delays in the implementation of informal settlement upgrading program by municipalities. Recommendation ensure spending on the informal settlements partnership grant in collaboration with the housing development agency, provide technical assistance to municipalities, closely monitor the performance of municipalities in relation to the upgrading of informal settlements in order to timely address challenges that may emerge. 3.4, that there was no performance in the issuing of title deeds program. This was a major concern for the committee because the department on several occasions was promised to this was a major concern for the committee because the department on several occasions promised to provide the committee with a detailed turnaround strategy to improve performance. However, the strategy has not been received by the committee and performance has not improved either. Recommendation finish the committee with a detailed plan or a turnaround strategy to improve the performance of the title deeds program. This plan must be presented to the committee by the first quarter of 22-23 financial year. Thereafter, progress report on quarterly basis should be provided to the committee in order to periodically assess performance. 3.5, that there was insufficient performance in the zoning of land for the priority development areas. Recommendation, furnish the committee with plans to improve the performance of PDAs by the first quarter of 2022-23 financial year. In collaboration with HDA, provide assistance to municipalities in developing their plans for PDAs, but track the identification and acquisition of land for human settlements. 3.6, that communities such as Masipumelele informal settlements were suffering from disasters such as fire, while the emergency housing grant was not being utilized. Recommendation: improve or shorten the process of releasing funding for emergencies. Ensure that emergencies are addressed within a short period of time. Furthermore, there must be a permanent solution to addressing disasters. This must be informed by evaluations to check what is needed at community level to prevent or minimize the effects of disasters. 3.7, that the policy on fraud and corruption was often not reviewed to deal with new forms of corruption. For instance, the committee, during its oversight visit to Gauteng province, observed that there were several cases of fraudulent sale of government houses, yet no actions were taken against perpetrators. Recommendation: ensure the review of policy on fraud and corruption in order to address new forms of corruption. Present to the committee cases of corruption that have been investigated and actions taken in cases of wrongdoing. 3.8, that there was a lack of coordination in planning, budgeting, and execution of housing program. Recommendation: strengthen coordination and intergovernmental relations both vertically and horizontally. There should be a diagnostic report on why there is a lack of coordination on the human settlements sector. There must be an integrated policy and legislative framework to ensure the realignment of the use of resources and deal with structural issues. This framework must be presented to the committee when it is completed. 3.9, that there were endless litigations when houses were invaded. This was also observed by the committee during the oversight visit to Gauteng province. Recommendation: develop measures to prevent invasions, which would subsequently deal with litigations. Involve prospective beneficiaries in the housing process to prevent invasions. 3.10, the committee was concerned that the performance of the department was at 37%. At the same time, the committee welcomed that the department was in the process of verifying provincial performance. However, there was a major concern of provincial performances. The recommendation: put in place a recovery plan to improve performance in the coming reporting cycle, support provinces to improve their performance. 3.11, that there were several blocked projects because bulk infrastructure was not provided. Recommendation: ensure the provision of bulk infrastructure before building houses, ensure proper project planning and sequencing. 3.12, that some houses were still built far away from opportunities, which led to some beneficiaries moving back to informal settlements closer to towns and cities. Recommendation: ensure that human settlements projects are integrated to opportunities closer to town and cities. Report to be considered. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Sabelo. Honorable members, that was the report of the second quarter. Okay, can I get any indication people want to speak to the report? I see the hands of Honorable Emma Powell, followed by Honorable Mokgotsu.
Thanks, Chair. I just would like to know why the second quarter report, we've already had the fourth quarter report. This was tabled before the committee on the 22nd of February. Why is the report only coming to us now in mid-June?
Honorable Mokgotsu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Under 3.11, there under observation of blocked projects. The reason that they've been given there, that of there were several projects because bulk infrastructure was not provided, is not the only reason that led to blocked projects. There are other reasons that are omitted, that are not stated there, such as contractors' poor performance and workmanship, financial challenges and mismanagement of funds, termination by the Department of Contracts, and lack of consequence management towards the service providers that whose work was not of good quality or, you know, acceptable standard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson?
Yes, Honorable Sabelo.
Sorry, Chair. Can Honorable Member say those other reasons again? She was just talking too fast.
Okay. The other reasons are?
It's the observation.
Yes,
the
member is based on the
observation.
Yes, 3.11. Yes. Can I go on?
Yes.
Can I proceed? Contractors' poor performance and workmanship, financial challenges and mismanagement of funds, termination by the Department of Contracts, and lack of consequence management towards the service providers whose work was not of good quality or of good standard. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Sabelo?
Yes, Chairperson.
Is it the... The observation, because I remember that this might be the two different things.
Mm-hmm.
There was a on the second quarter on the when they were presenting around the blocked the unfinished project in certain areas. It was specific areas where it affected the bulk water supply, like the CD Bang area. Honorable Mokoto, you remember that we had the meeting where the issue was presented on the budget, and the report has been taken around the issue of the block project. This was only on the specific area of the block project in a particular area. Is it not the one, Honorable Sawal, if I remember well? Because the report that we have adopted on the budget, before even the budget report, when the department came in to present the block project, these were the issues that were mentioned, as stated by Honorable Mokoto. And we had resolved on those matters. But on the second quarter report, there was a specific project that were asked around CD Bang, I think, which are not were not finalized or finished, and it was referred to as the problem of the bulk supply. So I just wanted us not to confuse the two issues.
Chairperson?
Yes, Honorable Mokoto?
I don't understand what you're trying to explain, because here we are speaking of several...
Please note, we have raised our hands, Chair.
Yes, well, Honorable Mokoto was discussing around the second quarter report.
Even though we are discussing around the second quarter report, we mustn't lose focus. We are speaking here of block projects. There were several reasons why there were blocked projects. And some of the
reasons... That's why I'm explaining, Honorable Mohotu, to say that the block project that was mentioned in quarter two was the one for Citibank. And there is the resolutions. If you remember, if you have your report on the when we're dealing with the block project, subsequent we had even discussion when we're dealing with the budget. There is a resolution around that. Let me give to Honorable Zeki and then
I think Member Mkhotu's reasons, Chair, they tend to be welcomed. The only area that I want to amend, as much as there were many reasons of the block project, but I can't remember where it was said there was mismanagement of funds. Termination of contracts because of poor performance is one of them. that she's adding, which I'm fine with it. But mismanagement of funds, I can't remember that one, which I don't want to, I'm not supporting her on that one. But on the other one, I do support her. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Dick, I'm saying there is a resolution on the block project. On the second quarter, when we're dealing with the second quarter, there was specific project that was mentioned in CDBing. Why it was not finished. And the reason was the bulk water bulk infrastructure. So maybe we should because there is a resolution of the committee on the block project, which we have taken even previously. So that's why I wanted to clarify that if we wanted to, whether it should be called a block project or an unfinished project on that specific area, it's something else. But we'd rather say, because there is a resolution on that we welcome the department to deal with the unblock the block project, and therefore we because the resolution of the APP was saying that the department should come back to the portfolio committee and come and present all the block projects from what level to to whatever until and then give us what is has been done to those projects and why they were left and then what is the budget to rectify that. So this is an addition on top of that block the issue of block project. Yes, Sabelo.
Through you, maybe will it be better just to say that that there was a blocked project because we are talking specifically on a one project.
Under observation. Yes, and mention the name of the area because on the block project in general, we've taken that decision, which the issues that Honorable Mokoto has mentioned reflect on that discussion that we have. And we've even took a decision that we welcome the intervention of the department, but we need to know where are these projects and then what happened to those projects if those projects were left with the poor performance, therefore they should then be, we should be told what is it that the department has done on those projects and the budget to rectify those issues.
Chairperson, it's Honorable Powell. May I proceed?
Yes, Honorable Member.
I'm looking at the presentation that was given to us from the department, the second quarter report, and on slide 55, the conclusion is that the National Department has written intention to withhold letters to the Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo provinces as a result of their dissatisfactory performance in the quarter. So it would be incorrect for us to say that there was one blocked project, because there have been, the presentation notes that these letters about dissatisfactory performance on projects have been sent at the end of the second quarter. So it's not just one project. I'm actually looking at the presentation, and I'd be happy to share it on the screen.
No. Honorable, we are talking about two different things. That was the performance in terms of the finances. But there was a member in the committee who raised the particular issue, because the observation, how we handle the observation, how we take the observation and recommendation is what members raise. And then if we don't get a satisfactory answer from the department, we then turn into the observation and recommendation. Which if you want to add on that one, it's not that one was not on the block project, it was on the performance of the provinces in terms of them utilizing their grants given to by the department.
Chair, that was because a number of projects were blocked for various reasons. Anyway, I'm not going to argue. These reports are meaningless. They're toothless because they're so heavily edited by certain interests. Please just note the objection of the DA to the adoption of this report.
Chairperson. Thank you. Honorable Mkhotu.
Since I do not get joy in what you have just said, we object as EFF to the presentation of this report.
Thank you. Even before we move for the adoption, can we then move for the adoption of the report? Honorable Zeki and Honorable Malaj.
Chair, I think for us who are interested in driving the transformation in government, can we just summarize, maybe some Savela can just summarize this point for us to move for the adoption, because clearly the two members have withdrawn their inputs. Thank you.
Okay, Savela.
Honorable Malachi.
Thank you.
Honorable Malachi.
Yes, Honorable Malachi. Honorable Chair, I think we've allowed Honorable Powell to abuse us as a committee for too long.
The member is casting aspersions on my character before Parliament. Please, would you call him to order?
That might be
objection, Chairperson.
No.
The member is saying that I am abusing the committee.
Honorable Powell, allow Honorable Malachi to speak. You'll come
I'm
in.
I'm calling a point of order, Chairperson, on the basis that he is misleading the committee and casting aspersions.
Sometimes, Chair, privilege might make you think that you are smarter than everyone. Because
Chairperson,
of the privilege.
Objection. I call a point of order, please. It's Honorable Powell.
Honorable Powell, allow
Malachi to finish.
No, Chairperson, he's casting aspersions on my character.
Honorable Powell, I'm ruling. Allow him to finish our response.
Chairperson, it's clear that he's casting aspersions. I'm not going to allow him to finish. You'll have to remove me from the platform. And I will refer the matter to the Ethics Committee and to the Chair of Chairs. I'm asking you to call the member to order for casting aspersions on me, saying that I abuse
the committee. There is no point of order, Honorable Powell. Allow
members to speak. Yes, it is, Chairperson. He is casting aspersions that are not based on fact. That is a point of order. In terms
you
of
are
the
abusing
Parliament.
Us. You can't listen to anybody. You don't
no,
even raise
the because he is misleading the committee, and I'm calling a point of order and asking
I'm saying
you
allow. He has not even finished the sentence already. You are jumping in the system. He has not even. I didn't even hear what Honorable Malachi was supposed to
yes,
say.
Yes, he did, Chairperson. I've called a point of order. He has said that
I'm
abused this committee.
I'm chairing, Honorable Powell. Can you allow me to chair the meeting?
Please let me speak after the member then.
Honorable Malachi, I didn't get your statement. Can you repeat so that we can see whether there is a need for order or not?
No, Chair, I repeat that Honorable Powell has been consistently abusing the meeting. And I think his behavior, her behavior, is informed by privilege to think that he's more of a thinker than anybody else in this committee. And I think that behavior must be corrected.
Honorable Malachi, every member has got the right to speak. What I would agree with you with is that members must be allowed to be appointed by the chair. But the issue that of issues of privilege or what, honorable member, is not there nor there. But what is important is members to respect one another and be patient. And as you speak, you must allow other members to listen. You must listen to other members. And even if you don't like what they're saying, allow them to finish and then you'll then be given opportunity to raise. But the issue of the privilege, honorable member, can you withdraw that part? But on other matters, I do agree with you. Honorable Malachi?
I withdraw the privilege.
Thank you, Honorable Malachi. Honorable Powell, on Honorable Butas will follow.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for your ruling and thank you for the withdrawal.
Honorable Zeki.
No, Chair, I've lowered my hand. I don't have anything.
Okay. You have moved. Sabelo, can you summarize the issue? There is a resolution on the block project, honorable members. And the performance, as I've indicated, is not based on the block project as presented in the second quarter. We're receiving the second quarter expenditure report on the and that is when the department indicated that Limpopo, there are three provinces that have not performed. Therefore, they would have they've written the letters to those provinces. It's not about the block project. Sabelo?
Yes, Chairperson. So the observation will read as follows, that there was a blocked project because park infrastructure was not provided, and then the project would be named, and then the recommendation would be to ensure the provision of park infrastructure before building houses, ensure proper project planning and sequencing, and then as you've suggested, that the recommendation would include where the projects are and what has been done in those projects and the budget around rectifying the block projects. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Sabelo. Can I get the mover for the adoption of the report with that amendment?
Chair, the African National Congress adopts.
Second.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson. Chair, we seem to have lost you.
No, I'm here, Honourable Powell. I'm not going anywhere. Colleagues, what is it on the agenda?
After the report, Chairperson, we are done.
Honourable Powell,
what is that?
I just want to ask, next week, can you please add an item to the agenda for matters arising if you can't take it this week?
Matters arising from what, Honourable Powell?
Well, the matter that you won't let me address you on now, the outstanding reports that we've been promised by the department.
Honourable Powell, you know, Honourable Powell, there is a procedure that we are using. You don't just want to throw things in the meeting.
I'm asking you to listen.
But you know what Honourable Powell, you can't even listen when people speak. I'm not.
I'd like to warn you, Chair.
The agenda. Yes.
I tried to warn you about Honourable Powell, Chair.
You can't even wait to allow a member to finish speaking. That's why you don't get what we're saying, because you don't have time to listen to other people's input, which is very wrong. I've said that if there is anything, firstly, this committee will adopt a report and the resolutions of those reports and the resolutions that we would be then put in the any form of a program. And this committee bring the program to the meeting, which gets adopted. And from there, ourselves, as we put the agenda, we follow the program as put, as adopted by members. And you asked in one meeting, what should I do if I want issues to be on the program? I said, submit them to colleagues.
Chairperson, may I respond?
Chairperson, if I can hear you.
We've lost you.
Chairperson?
Kaliswa, it seems as if the chair has disappeared from the platform. I've sent two emails already. I'll send a third email. That's fine. She's no longer on the platform to respond. she's back.
Sorry, I've got cut. I was still explaining the process, but I've requested honourable members, when you raise, how do we bring issues to be discussed in the meeting? I said, I'm not developing a program. The program is developed by through Koleswa and will bring it to the meeting for the adoption. And the program that we itemize issues for agenda is the one that has been adopted by the committee. And therefore, Honorable Powell, anything that you want us to discuss must go through that process. There is nothing that will come lini-lini in the meeting because we are running a committee, we're following the procedure. Send those issues to Koleswa for them to be processed. We'll come to this meeting as a form of a program and the committee will adopt them as a program that will be followed by this meeting.
Chairperson, may I respond?
No, I don't need you to respond. That is the
problem. That's why I have to interject, because you don't allow members to speak. The meeting is still in session. May I respond to you?
No, I'm not going to allow
see,
to you.
Why
I'm saying, you have asked me, can you
to your office making requests and never once are they acknowledged
or responded to.
When I come to committee and I ask you to put things on the agenda to answer simple questions,
honorable
you tell
member,
me that I must email you.
Member,
I email you, you don't respond.
Member,
this is the ANC's strategy, Chairperson. Now you
member,
won't allow me to respond. We were promised reports by the Housing Development Agency on the terms of reference of
Honorable
the Condemnation Committee.
Powell.
It has been outstanding
Honorable
now
Powell.
For 2 weeks, Chairperson. I'm sorry, you are not... You must remove me from
the committee.
I will be escalating this, Chair. The level of gatekeeping and censorship of this committee has...
Honorable Koleswa, can you remove Honorable Powell from this meeting? You don't want to listen. Okay,
listen, I will be referring this
remove
matter
it,
to the chair.
Yeah,
you
right,
do not
right,
respond
right,
to correspondence, nor
Honorable
do you acknowledge
Powell.
It, and Honorable, you do not take
Honorable
input into
it. Honorable Powell, I'm very much sorry, Honorable Members. Before we close the meeting, Honorable Members, we have been request. We had the letter. We received the letter from the department asking us on the for us to participate in the UN Habitat Conference that is hosted annually. They invited members of parliament to participate. We have through Koleswa, we are sending the request to the chair of chairs, which will end up to the speaker, and then we'll then inform members of the outcome. The second issue is that we were advised by the chair of chair's office that actually we had a meeting of the chair of chairs, which briefed us on the legislation that are on pipeline, which needs to be finalized by the parliament. And we were advised that we should first strike legislation so that we are able to give enough time for the NCOP to deal with the legislation, and we were advised that we can because those committees that are on public participation process or they are in the process of dealing with legislation, we can put a request to the House Chair that we should proceed with our work
to finalize legislation. In this case, we are writing again the submission to the Chair of Chairs that will propose to finalize the provinces that are still outstanding on the public participation, which is Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest, Northern Cape, and Western Cape. So we will target July and then in August, part of August and September before the, August, July, August, and September to finalize the public hearings that we are dealing with. Secondly, is that we have requested the Sabelo to extract those issues that are of service delivery from the report. And as have been raised by communities, for them to be tabled in the committee, for the purpose of giving department and provinces the opportunity to respond on those issues or to address those issues that have been raised by communities. So we will forward those reports to members who are at the public hearings, just to, if there is any addition, members, please communicate your additions to to Sabelo, so that when it comes on the 15th, which is the last date in terms of our program, we're going to adopt the two reports, the third quarter and the fourth quarter, and the outstanding minutes. Then we'll include even those the issues and that were raised by communities, and then we'll table them through the committee, and then we'll even finalize, adopt the program for the next term, honorable members. We don't squeeze issues during the nilly-nilly. We follow the program, which will be adopted by yourself, honorable members. So those are the, just an announcement. Honorable Malachi, I see your hand is up.
It's a legal venture.
Okay. All right. Those are the issues. Sabelo, can you then distribute those, it's not reports, the issues that were raised in the public hearing, which are of service delivery in nature, to those members who were at the public hearing for them to make their input.
Okay.
And then in the next meeting, we'll then be able to adopt them and make a plan out of them and give the department to respond to those issues, including the resolutions that were taken, which would then form part of the program of action for the committee for the next term. Thank you very much. Maybe I can allow any clarification question on the announcement. If there is none, Ms. Mekoni.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to find out if are you saying
The public hearings which have already taken place, those are the ones which we need to put up a report on, or are we and submit to the department, or are we going to wait for other hearings which are supposed to be in the next term, or we're just dealing with those ones which have already taken place?
Yes, that would be those ones that we have visited, and people have raised those service delivery issues. And then because one of the resolution of the report is that we should actually invite provinces. So those issues will then be tabled with the provinces for them to respond on them and assist to address them.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair.
Clear to honorable members?
Yes.
Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.